spring when they come in. So if you could just free up those seats towards the end there. Just Mr. Kaya, if you can move. And I think there's, is there one more seat there? How many seats are there? Just one. Two. If somebody else can also move so that some members who come in late can just take up those seats. And could somebody please keep the lights on? I know that is not an exercising facility. as far as I know, ESCOM is still all right. Good morning to Mr. Poshwana and your team from Transnet. Welcome. We hope that today's session is going to be as fruitful for you as it is no doubt going to be for us and the media. I understand that you have some presentations which you wish to take us through for the first hour and a half. And thereafter, what I'm going to do is we're going to open up for questions, both on the presentations as well as anything else that members would want to deal with, including those issues that arose as a result of our visit to Transnet's premises recently, and the presentations that we received from yourselves very kindly during that time. But for the time constraints, we were not able to engage effectively. So we're not going to have a separate session to deal with those issues. They'll all come as questions in our interactive session, okay? unless members have any questions or queries up front, I suggest we proceed immediately to the presentation so that we can have sufficient time for interaction later on. Over to you, Mr. Poshwana, and again, very warm welcome to you.
Chairperson, thanks very much. This visit has the sort of austere title that we're coming to present our annual report to you. Actually, I prefer to think about it as an occasion where we report to you, give you an overview of what happened in the preceding year, which actually gets encapsulated in our annual report. And I would agree with you that the most important thing will in fact be exchanging views and sharing them and explaining those things which for people who don't run the business on a day-to-day basis might look a bit obscure. I went through the notes of the meeting we had last year, and after that I looked at what we want to present today. And it was very clear to me that the story remains the same. It is an integrated story. It's a story that evolves. And for us, it's a story that makes sense. And hopefully, as we go through these presentations, we may be able to convey some of that sense to you. Because the presentations have been put together in such a way that there's some level of repetition in them, you may find we skip through some slides simply because other people will have dealt with the issue. Now, at a very high level, I think when you turn a business around, you learn a number of things. You can turn around, the pace at which you can turn around is determined by what you inherit. And that is precisely what we have learned. And what determines that are basically two things. Firstly, what I would call the hardware, and by hardware I'm referring to all your physical assets, your trains, your railway lines, whatever you use, your computers. The state of those will determine how far you go, and if you look at our capital expenditure, you will see that the division between maintenance and sustaining capex and growth capex is a fairly high ratio, and that reflects all the things from the past that we had to correct. The second is what I would call the software, and that will refer to all the people, all the soft issues that people talk about when you talk about an organization. And I think where we are as Transnet is that we're beginning to feel to be the same organization, and you will see that we have a motto which talks about one company, one vision. And as the as we talk about this, you can interrogate on us on that, and we can tell you what it means. But it's very important that the organization becomes one, and that it sees its task as being a unified task. So we can talk about that as well, if you wish. One other lesson you learn is about planning and coordination. And we have been through many, many lessons according to, as far as that is concerned. It is not enough to have a very good CAPEX plan for the ports. You also have to have a very good CAPEX plan for what comes before the port. Maybe they may be locomotives, there may be railway lines. So we have learned to look at our business in an integrated fashion. And perhaps as we talk through this, a bit of that sense should come through to you as well. Now, turning to the order of the day, I think somebody has already skipped a slide. Just go a few slides back. Those are the issues we will cover, my opening, and then Maria will take you through some strategic issues. Chris through finance and performance, Pradeep through human resources, and then Moira will talk a bit about our CAPEX program, and then the operating divisions, the chief executives can address that very briefly. And then there's a conclusion and which Maria will tie everything together. There may very well be questions out of recent newspaper reports you want to ask. I mean, we're quite happy to engage with that as well. We can do that as well because we have a presentation actually which we presented, so we can give that to you. Okay, so we will do that as part of our presentation to bring you up to speed with how we see things and what the facts are. Turning to my first slide, which really deals with the shareholder compact. And the shareholder compact is basically our mandate. And that mandate is our agreement and the shareholders' agreement in terms of what Transnet has to achieve, where it has to go, strategic objectives, key performance areas. And basically, if you think about it, our mandate remains the same and is determined by our founding documents, by prevailing legislation, and of course by the shareholder compact I've just referred to. And in brief, as you will see from the slide, our key role is to assist in lowering the cost of doing business in South Africa and enabling economic growth through providing appropriate ports, rail, and pipeline infrastructure and operations in a cost-effective and efficient manner within acceptable benchmarks. Now, if you look at 2007-2008, and I've shifted to the next slide, and Chris will talk in detail about most of these measures, which are financial measures, you have volume and revenue growth, you have financial value creation, infrastructure and maintenance, and then human capital. Now, you will see in terms of the results, and we will get deeper into this, that as far as that we have met all these objectives except the one on volume growth, or volume increase, we call it there. And we will talk about what drives that, what the reasons are. I think it's mainly in iron ore and coal, but we can get deeper into that if you wish. The rest we have met, I think. If there are any questions on those, we can pick them up as we go along. But as I say, there are slides that unpack all those in much greater detail than you see here. And then on the next slide, you just get all the four key areas of impact that I've spoken about in the compact: capital and financial efficiency. You will remember last year I sketched how our balance sheet was when we found it. We now have a strong balance sheet. We have an appropriate gearing, which enables us to go out there and lend money, which is the next bullet point, cost-effective funding. On operating efficiency and effectiveness, volume growth, especially the general freight business, we have seen that business turn around, which begins to show us that one of the objectives we've had, which is moving volume from the road onto rail, is actually beginning to work. And I think the chief executive dealing with that can tell you, give you more detail on that. Operating margin improvement, which on the previous slide was just our EBITDA margin. This is a result mainly of the fact that as you turn around, you become more efficient. Your costs contract. And if your costs contract at the same level, at the same level of earning, of course your margin increases. And I think you will see that continuing to happen as we address our costs. But also the second issue on that is that we have, in fact, as you know, divested of many of our businesses which actually were not profitable businesses. So when you take all those out, you do end up with businesses that give you a much better margin and a much better return. Business re-engineering, I think Moira might talk a bit about that. I've spoken about non-core businesses and competitively priced services. That is an issue which, as we go through the piece, we need to address more and more. And that has to do with our customer responsiveness. And I think Maria, when she talks about our new strategy, will touch on what we're doing there. And then we've spoken about infrastructure investment, which is the correlation between the budget and actual capital spending, which is always something one has to watch. And, of course, implementing our maintenance plan. And that is much easily said than done if you take the age of our equipment and the fact that we have to keep that equipment operating at maximum efficiency while at the same time embarking on a program of replacement, which is indeed under development, that investment program we're talking about. Maria can also talk about what we're doing on ASGISA, on skills development, and on BEE. So in conclusion, in setting up our presentation, I would say we have made satisfactory progress in implementing our strategy. As we went into last year, it was very clear that what we called the turnaround of Transnet had reached an end, and that when we moved forward, we had to look at actually growth. In other words, we were not turning anything around. We were going to run the business, and this is the challenge that faces us. How do you run this business? How do you improve its returns to be able to reinvest? And that is the challenge that faces us as we look into the future. And that, I think, basically covers most of what I wanted to say by way of teeing the thing up. Maria, can you pick it up?
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairman, and good morning, Chairperson, and members of the committee, and ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present here this morning. One of the things we haven't done is to introduce the team, and because we're all sitting so far away, I think it's probably going to be easier if people introduce themselves. And if I can start on that side of the table, maybe John, you can start by introducing yourself, and then we can just go around, certainly from the Transnet team, so that everybody present can know
who's around the table from outside, very quickly. My name is John. I'm responsible for Transnet.
Zola Steven, Group Company Secretary Transnet. The left speaking to the microphone, right? And then
switch
the microphone
for Transnet. Zola Steven,
Group Company Secretary Transnet.
I'm Siyabonga Gama, Chief Executive of Transnet Freight Rail. Uyo Kasha, Group Executive, Officer of the Group.
Ayanda Kreba, Executive Manager, Office of the Group Executive, Office of the Group Chief Executive.
I'm Towa Majoka, Transnet Trade Engineering, Strategy and Marketing.
Morning, I'm Moira Moses. I'm the Group Executive for Capital Projects.
Louis Finneker, Chief Operating Officer of Transnet Group.
I'm Dao Moore from Transnet Port Terminals.
Shaw Moller, the CEO of Transnet Pipelines.
I'm Virginia Dujo, Chief Officer for Transnet.
Carl Sotikwa, Group Executive, Transnet Commercial.
Pradeep Maharaj, Group Executive, Human Resources.
Chris Wells, Chief Financial Officer, Transnet.
Thanks, Chair. I just thought so that we all
around the table. There is, as the chairman says, quite a long presentation, and in the interest of time, I am not going to go through all of the slides, and the committee did receive the presentation ahead of time, in part because many of the things that are covered in my part of the presentation are also covered in more detail by my colleagues. So if I can just turn directly to the first slide, I think just to make the point that our mandate, our vision and mission are now well set out and understood by everybody, certainly inside the company. And it's perhaps worth reminding ourselves, because some of the issues that are going to be picked up by Pradeep relate to an extensive exercise that we have been conducting inside the company with all of our employees from the shop floor all the way up to senior management, and around the culture of the company, our values, and reinforce the mission and the vision of the company. And so the mission and the vision of Transnet, supported by a culture charter, has been very much part of developing the software, as the chairman has spoken about, rather than just the hardware of the company. I think the next couple of slides deal with Transnet's structure, and I'm not going to go through it, save to make the point that we really are now focused on the core of operations, which has always been our strategy. And so when we come to, as we do in the presentation and as we give a full account in our annual report of the turnaround strategy on the next slide, again, we had reached the point in the year under review where we felt we had made sufficient progress and embedded enough of the turnaround strategy to create the platform to move from turnaround to growth, and we could no longer sustain just a turnaround in the company. That there was enough energy, enough of that turnaround embedded both from an operations point of view, from a balance sheet point of view, from the human capital point of view, and from just the sense within employees and the culture of the company to support the fact that the company was ready for growth. That it doesn't mean to say that, as you'll see when we talk about the growth strategy, that the pillars, the re-engineering, for example, the focus on balance sheet, the focus on corporate governance, the focus on human capital, all of those are very much part of the growth strategy. But it is focused on growth and not focused just on the turnaround. And so in the presentation that we sent you, we picked some of the highlights of what's been achieved over the last 4 years, really, in terms of the turnaround, both from a re-engineering point of view, which has been focused on the freight logistics business and our ports, and redefining and reorienting the company, and on the balance sheet side, on our corporate governance, and also on our human capital. I think importantly, the turnaround has been around getting the operational efficiencies. And I think sometimes there is a sense that the entire turnaround has been about getting the balance sheet sorted out. And of course, a lot of the turnaround has been, one of the pillars of the turnaround was about stabilizing the finances of the company. You can't run a company whose finances are constantly in a state of flux and volatile, and you don't know whether you have a balance sheet to work with or not, or whether you have the liquidity or not in the company, whether you're bankrupt today or not. So you had to stabilize the company financially. But this turnaround has also been fundamentally about improving, and remains about improving the operation. The growth strategy is about improving the operational performance and efficiencies across the business. And in the annual report, and I'm sure some of my colleagues will probably pick up on this, and certainly in the presentation, what we've done is just picked on a couple of measures, both from a growth in commodities and some of the KPIs,
that we measure, and you've been in our ports, you've been in our rail operations, but we're measuring what it is we're doing and what are we achieving in terms of a KPI and an asset utilization point of view to increase what we transport in our rail, increase what we're moving through our ports, for example, in containers, as you'll see on that slide, and what we're moving through our pipeline network, as you will see in terms of growth in commodities. And in all of those measures, you can see that the trend is an upward trend. And that's what we're driving. We need to see more volumes moving through our network and through our assets and better asset utilization. On the KPIs on that slide, we essentially are measuring asset utilization and performance, whether that's net tons per wagon, where we have seen improvements on the rail side, or the container moves per crane hour on our container terminals, where we are now currently at around 25 container moves in Durban, or we look at capacity utilization on our pipeline, where our refined product pipeline is actually being utilized or used at full capacity plus. We measure the same in terms of our revenue, and we measure the same in terms of EBITDA, and Chris will go through these in a lot more detail. If we move to the slide to the next slide, and we're looking at the at measures in our freight rail business, you'll see that when we look at the measures on the freight rail business, and we look at what we're spending on maintenance, for example, there's been a massive increase in what we have been spending on maintenance, and primarily because on the freight rail business, as you would know, and the committee would well know, historically we haven't actually spent much on maintenance and on capital investment in this business. And so there's been a lot of maintenance that we've had to catch up with, and there's a very focused program between Transnet Freight Rail and Transnet Rail Engineering on the maintenance side. Our capital expenditure program has also been one where we've seen significant expansion in that, and I'm very happy to say that in the year under review, we did get close to spending what we had budgeted for. So we spent 15.7 billion rand on capital expansion in the year. And then, of course, we've seen, as the Chairman has already indicated, major improvements from a balance sheet point of view, which gets then reflected, amongst other things, in what's happened with gearing. Moira is going to deal with the capital projects and give you a sense of how those capital projects are doing, so I'm not going to deal with it here. And Pradeep is going to deal with the human capital side of the business, and he's got a few slides, so I won't go through the details of that here. On the corporate governance side, I should also indicate to you that we have put in place, as we indicated last year, and it's working incredibly well, amongst other things, very strict corporate governance systems. The board's got a board risk management committee, for example, and between the board risk management committee and the audit committee, we have in place inside the company and with an outsourced internal audit division, very strict corporate governance mechanisms and systems. We've got a whistleblower mechanism through a tip-off anonymous, and that works very well, and there are reports that go directly to the Risk Management Committee and the Audit Committee on this as well. In terms of procurement spend, what that slide indicates, and in your slide there isn't a shaded portion, but on the slide up there we've put up a shaded portion that shows that about 41% of our total procurement spend is now BBBEE. So we are making, it is a process and a policy of the company to focus on DEE
as part of our procurement process. In terms of the shifting focus towards growth, I think when the committee visited Transnet, we did spend quite a lot of time on the growth strategy. But I indicated to the committee that we had reached this point of building on the turnaround and moving towards growth, and that is the point that we are at the moment. So the growth strategy that we're pursuing now is one that focuses on increasing volumes, on new customer services and development, which is why we appointed and created the position of a commercial division, which Carl heads, to coordinate the services we offer to our top clients so that they get an integrated service from us and we can run this business on a more integrated basis. And that essentially drives the commercial side of the business and then allows us also to integrate our investment in a better way so that we can drive and extract the synergies between ports and rail, for example, so that we are at the moment making big investments in Cape Town and Durban and in the port of Lucha, we are at the same time making the investments in rail that will support that. And that is the way that the business is being run, more and more on an integrated basis, more and more on a network basis, so that you can actually extract value out of the business as we go along. The next slides deal with the growth targets going forward into the next 5 years, and I think this gives the committee a sense that alongside putting enormous amounts of investment, of capital investment down, we are also putting some very ambitious targets down in terms of volumes. Volume growth in ports, in pipelines, and in rail are significant and do set very big stretches for the executive team over the next 5 years. And you have to consider the fact that, for example, we are making these investments on the infrastructure side. They don't, when you order locomotives, they don't all of them arrive in the same month. So they come in sometimes one by one, or they get delivered to every couple of months, and it takes time to replace the existing infrastructure. And so when you put these stretch targets in place, they really do require, and sometimes they just replace existing capacity, in fact, but these are quite significant stretch targets, and they also deal with some of the constraints we have in the network at the moment. The chairman indicated earlier that one of the targets we did not achieve in our corporate plan was the volume target. And that was driven primarily because we did not achieve our targets for iron ore, and we did not achieve our targets for coal. On the iron ore side, it was driven by the fact that, as we have now said repeatedly, the iron ore volumes just were not available from the mine. And on the coal side, I think we have also said that we take responsibility for the bulk of that, but there were also shortages of coal in the year under consideration. So both iron ore and coal have been an issue, and it's been those two volumes that have actually dragged down the overall performance from a volume point of view. The general freight business actually delivered. The next slide just gives you a sense of where we've come from a capital investment point of view. In 2001, the company had invested about 2 billion rand. We've just invested almost 16 billion rand on capital. So that's a big, big change. I want to then turn a couple of slides later to slide 22 in relation to that capital investment and give the committee a sense of how that capital investment breaks down. You'll see that increasingly the capital investment is being split. It's been split up to now primarily in terms of replacement to sustain existing capacity. As we go into the future, hopefully these ratios will change even more, but we're starting to see a change in the ratio. And so into the future, in the next 5 years, about 42% of the planned capital investment will be spent on replacement, and about 58% will be spent on expansion. And that's good for Transnet, but more importantly, it's good for the South African economy. And I think that's what's important here. In terms of the major challenges and the risks we face in growing the business, there are a couple, but there's always risk in any business, so I don't want to dwell on these too much. Of course, we all know that the global and the domestic economy is going through a slowdown, and so we are trying to expand in the middle of a global slowdown, and that's not always easy. And coupled with that is the fact that energy costs are also an issue, so some of our input costs, oil, electricity, for example, prices of those have gone up quite significantly. And importantly for a business like ours, where we're involved in a major capital investment expansion, one of the costs that has actually gone up very significantly has been the cost of steel. And so that has impacted very significantly on our capital costs. And so we have to consider all of that in the way we factor in the way we price the service as well that we are offering our clients. We're making enormous capital investments here, and that we have to price those capital investments appropriately. We have a business where safety is an issue, and we remain focused on that. I think the other issue, which is set out in the next slide, and which I'll conclude on, is the fact that Transnet operates in an increasingly complex regulatory environment. And all I've done here is set out two regulators. One is the ports regulator, or potentially three regulators. One hasn't come into existence yet, although we believe there's some talk of it. One is the ports regulator, the other one is NERSA. But it is a complex regulatory environment that we have to navigate through. We're not alone in this, but it does take some time and some effort to navigate through it. And we potentially face another regulator, as I understand it, in the form of a rail economic regulator. So this is a business that operates in quite a complex economic environment. And we need to take account of that as we manage the business now and into the future. And on that note, I'll hand over to Chris. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Maria. Members, I'm going to first of all go through the income statement, which is the statement that records the result of operations for the year. Start off with revenue. Revenue is essentially volume times price, and the volumes being the goods that we've transported during the year times the price of that activity. Revenue went up by 11.9% to just over 30 billion. And if we recall that the average inflation rate was around about 6%, that is real growth in the period. It's important to note that this revenue is external revenue, in other words, the services outside of the Transnet group. You will see recorded under the individual business division results a concept of internal revenue. And that's where a division does work on behalf of another part of Transnet. Obviously, when we present the results, you only show the revenue external to Transnet. And so that might be a bit confusing when you look through the operating expenses, which include things like personnel costs, maintenance, energy, increased by 7.3% to 16.9 billion. And a much lesser percent than revenue, went up. Revenue is an indication of the activity in the period, and costs increased by 4% less than revenue, indicative of good cost control and productivity improvements. In our costs, 55% of the total costs are comprised of personnel and energy. 40% of total costs are personnel. So you can see where the principal cost drivers are in Transnet. EBITDA, which is earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization, increased by 18% to 13.1 billion. And you can see the benefit of productivity and cost control is because revenue went up 11.9, costs 7.3, but EBITDA has been geared up to 18%, and that's because costs increased at a lower rate than revenue. And just seeing the contribution to earnings before interest, tax, and depreciation from the individual business units, you can see it's split equally between TNPA, that's the National Port Authority, and Freight Rail. That's in the pie chart, both 39%, with port terminals coming in with 14%. The others show. And as the chairman pointed out, you can see the progress of margin in the graph from 17% in 2004 to 43% now. The big increase from 17 to 39% in 2006 was getting rid of the low margin businesses through part of our turnaround program. Set on the next slide, slide 27, is the detailed income statement. I'm going to draw attention to a couple of items there. The first would be depreciation and amortization, which is the cost below the EBITDA heading. And depreciation is the estimated usage of your assets for the year. And that's the provision for the usage of your assets during the year. It's known as depreciation. That increased by 28%, and that's a trend we're going to see going forward. The increase is directly attributable to the increase in capital expenditure that has taken place, and Maria referred to earlier. The next line, I think, is a very important one to understand our results, and that's fair value adjustments, which you can see these are profits, in effect, decreased from 2.2 billion in the prior year to 1.3 billion this year. The reason they were so high in the previous year, 2.2 billion, was that we marked to market in the previous year an investment Transnet had, which was a C preference share, and it was an investment in a structure whose value depended on the MTN share price. It was part historically of sale of MTN shares to a company to enable management and employees in MTN to participate in a share scheme. And this was an investment resulting from that structure. And in terms of international financial reporting standards, we have to market to market value because the MTN share price in that year increased significantly. There was a 1.7 billion increase in fair value. So it's a book entry, it's not cash yet. In the current year, we didn't have that investment anymore because we sold it in the beginning of the year. We sold it for nearly 5.7 billion rand, and it was a key reason why we didn't need to borrow significantly in the year end of 31 March 2008. The fair value adjustment in the current year is primarily from the revaluation of investment properties, which are held in NPA and in Transnet Property, the central property holding division. And those are properties that are held to earn rental income, and that's why they're called investment properties. And those you have to revalue annually, and the revaluation has to come through on this line. So when you compare last year with this year, there's a billion rand less fair value coming in this year, because of not having the MTN investments. It's got nothing to do with operating efficiency. It's just we sold an investment, so there's less fair value adjustment. And it's important to understand that. The next line is finance costs, but that is the interest borne on the borrowings that we have. And the reason it decreased from 2.3 to 1.9 was because of that cash, largely because of that cash, 5.7 billion, that we held from the sale of the MTN related structure. And so we didn't need to borrow. In fact, we had cash on deposit for a large part of the year. The taxation of 2.4 billion has gone up in relation to the taxable profits. And taxes split evenly between current tax, that which is payable now, and deferred tax, which is that which is payable in the future, giving a net profit for the year of 6.2 billion, which is virtually the same as the prior year. And so if one wants to look at how well Transnet did year on year, the best line to go to is EBITDA, the third line in the slide, which shows an 18% increase, because that's not distorted by changes in fair value, depreciation, and tax. We can move on to the balance sheet. The total assets deployed by Transnet in running the business is now nearly 100 billion rand, 98.9 billion rand. So a very sizable business. Now that shows a significant increase from the prior year, and the reason is shown in the first asset shown, which is property, plant and equipment, PPE. You can see that that has increased from 53 billion to 78 billion. That has increased because of the capital expenditure that Maria referred to in the year, 15.7 billion, less the depreciation that I showed you in the previous slide of nearly 4 billion. And then we revalued, as we do as part of our accounting policy, the port assets, largely the wet assets, in other words, the quay walls and the breakwaters and the like, and the pipeline assets. These are independently revalued every 5 years and then indexed in the in-between years of 1 to 4. And there was a big uplift in value, particularly on the port assets this year, of some 13 billion, which is reflective of the change in construction costs and project management costs, and specifically dredging, that's digging the sand around the quay walls. Investment property is the increase in the properties held for rent, and that was 1.1 billion a year, and that's the main reason for that that increase. Moving on to the other side of the balance sheet, if we can just move to the next slide. This slide shows how that 98 billion of assets is financed. So where did the finance come to support those assets? And you can see primarily the finance came from capital and reserves, 51.1 billion, the top line. Now, when we started on the turnaround in 2004, that line was under 10 billion rand. So in the period of turnaround, it has increased fivefold. It was critical for us to build capital because we need to finance the growth in Transnet off our own balance sheet. A mandate given to us was that we did not want to borrow in the future with a government guarantee, which is more expensive and causes a contingency on the National Treasury account. We needed to finance growth through effective operations of the Transnet business. It was important to build up the capital, and you can see that's been done very effectively, and it is really necessary given the very significant investment program going forward, some 80 billion rand of capital. I just want to refer to the post-retirement benefit obligation. Now, if we can go back to the previous slide. They are 2.1 billion, and primarily those are post-retirement medical obligations. There's no provision there for pension funds, as the pension funds, which I'll show you shortly, are fully funded. And we'll come back to that in the next slide when I address that. You can see in the graph in the bottom right-hand corner, the gearing has gone down from 83% in 2004 to 29%. Now, gearing is the percentage that your assets are financed through borrowing. And essentially, it's the ratio of borrowings to borrowings plus capital in the shareholders' equity. And so at 83%, it's a very, very weak balance sheet with what we started with in 2004. And with that balance sheet, we were unable to borrow in the debt capital markets without a government guarantee. And on top of that, our rating meant that the cost of borrowings were higher than what an investment grade rating would determine. Since our turnaround has begun, we have been re-rated positively, and that enables us to borrow cost-effectively in the market. We're an investment-grade rating. I'll show you that shortly. So you can borrow cost-effectively in the debt capital market, both locally and internationally. And just looking at our post-retirement obligations, dealing with the Transnet Second Defined Benefit Fund, in 2004, there was a significant deficit on this fund. Now, it's important to realize this fund is not part of Transnet. It's a separately constructed fund with its own board of trustees, registered under the Transnet Pension Fund Act. But Transnet guarantees the obligations of the pension fund. Now, as I mentioned, in 2004, it had a significant deficit. It now has a significant surplus, as indicated in the slide. One of the very positive developments that we've been able to achieve working with the trustees was to improve the benefits received annually by the members of that fund. And you'll know in terms of the rules of the fund, members are entitled to a 2% annual increase. That's encoded in the rules of the fund. Well, last year, the fund managed to declare bonuses to shareholders, and pensioners received between 2.5% and 3.5% by way of bonuses in addition to their 2%. And you may recall that Transnet, in addition, allocated approximately 100 million rand for an ex gratia payment where every pensioner received some increase, and the pensioners that were over 65 and had more than 15 years of service, i.e. those that had long service but probably wouldn't easily get a job, were allocated more. And we particularly focused on the previously disadvantaged, those who are earning low pensions. Coming to the current year, 2008-2009, it's pleasing to report that the fund is going to give a bonus in total of 8.5% in addition to the 2% required by the rules. And in addition to that, Transnet is again declaring an ex gratia payment where every pensioner will get something. The pensioners over 65 with more than 15 years service will get extra, and the lower earning pensioners, which include mainly the previously disadvantaged, and this is where the main part of our ex gratia payment is, will get a pension from the pension fund of a minimum of 8,400 rand per year. Some of those pensioners were getting very small amounts annually. The Transnet Pension Fund, which is the second retirement fund, also has a significant surplus, and it's been split now into three sub-funds, an SAA one, an SARCC one, and a Transnet one, and each has their own sub-board of trustees, but it's in a very strong strong financial position. And we'll move on that. Next slide, please. On the post-retirement medical benefit, I'm not going to deal in detail with it. Just to let you know, it's primarily comprised of the SAPS pensioners who get a subsidy of 800 Rand per month, per member, per principal member from Transnet. And then Transnet also subsidizes employees at 213 Rand per member family per month. Moving on to the next slide. On cash flow. The cash flow is probably the most important statement because there are various accounting requirements that require book entries to be made, which don't generate cash. But cash is the one statement that is very simple to understand and is a good measure of what improvements have taken place from a cash measurement point of view. And you can see cash flows from operating activities increased 22% during the year, which is evidence of very strong cash flow in the period. Just referring to two components of the cash flow, what we did with the money, we spent 15.7 billion on capital, up from 11.5 billion in the prior year. And under other investment activities, where you can see 7.5 billion, 5.7 billion of that, or 5.6 billion of that, was through the sale of the C preference share, which I referred to earlier. And you can see the very healthy position in the cash interest cover. That is, how many times the interest that you've got to pay to the people who've lent us money, how many times that's covered by cash profit. Moving on. This is a more detailed presentation of the compact with the shareholder that the chairman took us through. And I'm not going to spend too much time on it because the individual business division address this more specifically. Suffice to say that the main reason why we didn't make the volume increase was TFR. As you can see, we had a slight decrease in volume there, and I'll show you that in more detail in another slide. But primarily, that's because of coal volume, which were much lower than the prior year and budget. Okay, if we look at TFR, and again, Sia will cover some aspects later. In fact, I'll leave these because the individual CEOs are going to go through them because of time. If we can just move through to slide 39, which is a very important slide, and I'll spend a bit of time on it. What we have done up to now is really prepare the business to be able to grow strongly, as Maria demonstrated in our new growth strategy. And we've deliberately ensured that the balance sheet is incredibly strong in order to be able to cater for the expansion that's coming. So the balance sheet is now at its strongest. We're now going to spend significant amount of capital, and there's going to be a need to borrow significantly over the next few years. And so the borrowing percentage will increase, gearing will increase, and depreciation will increase significantly, but it's been planned for. And just to show you the extent, if you look at the shaded column in the right-hand side, you can see what's going to happen over the next 3 years. We will generate some 29 billion in cash from operations. But we're going to be spending nearly 62 billion in capital investment over the next 3 years. It's a real high intensity of spending, and it's a challenge and really needs a lot of planning and a lot of organization and commitment. And then if you look at the bottom line there, we need to spend $37 billion. Rather, we need to raise $37 billion by way of borrowings to finance that capital. Now, $37 billion is really significant given, as you saw, our net borrowings of $16 billion in the balance sheet. And the sources of borrowing are shown in the pie chart, and it's primarily going to be locally sourced through bonds and commercial and the issuance of commercial paper. But we will need to tap the foreign markets. And where we've shown ECA there, those are Export Credit Agency supported funds. Export Credit Agencies are agencies of government in the countries we're likely to import most of our imported product from, where those agencies support exports from that country of origin with guarantees that enable lower interest rates on borrowed funds. And so we've already set up umbrella facilities with those export credit agencies in the major countries that we're going to import from. And then we are likely to tap the foreign markets by means of bonds and structured loans as well going forward. We move to the next slide. And the next slide just identifies the sources of funds. And I'll just mention the first one is we are in the process of setting up, in addition to our domestic program, a European medium-term note program and a program in the US, which is known as a 144A option, to enable us to borrow by way of bonds in the US. Then the next slide just shows the credit metrics going forward and mentions the sort of metrics that our rating agencies would expect. And our plan going forward shows that we remain in line with the expectations of the rating agencies. And so our rating should continue through that expansion period. And we've also shown what our S&P and Moody's ratings are. Currently, the global scale foreign currency rating, BBB+, which is investment grade, and it's the same as sovereign, i.e. the South African rating. And if we have time, I'll come back to our last slide, which is on regulation, but I won't deal with it right now.
We have a comprehensive human resource strategy that was approved in 2006 that forms the basis and the framework for the initiatives that we embark upon as part of an implementation program. It is made up of both the softer side of embedding change in the organization, like the culture, as well as systemic changes that are the harder things, that is like process, policies, procedures, and that is where performance management, talent management, skills development comes into place. In the year that we've just finished, the key drivers for the initiatives were around culture of the organization, performance management, skills development, and of course talent. Just moving on, we've just completed one of the most comprehensive and a fairly unique process in defining the culture of the organization. If you're talking about taking this organization to the next level, which is growth can only come through people. Whilst investing in infrastructure and capacity is absolutely critical, it's really the people that deliver the performance. And in this regard, we have run a process in the organization that seeks to define the culture. And in defining the culture, we've asked our staff to shape the behaviors that make up the culture of the organization. We have 48,000 full-time employees, another 7,000-odd contract employees. So out of 55,000 people that are employed in Transnet, we've actually mobilized just over 44,000 to cast a vote in defining the behaviors that make up the culture of the organization. We just completed that exercise. We're now in the process of scoring ourselves so that we can identify gaps that need to be addressed through interventions in ensuring that the behaviors align to a winning Transnet that delivers on the vision and mission, as well as what the customers expect, which is about reliability, trustworthiness, responsiveness, and safety. The culture charter itself is seven key behaviors that make that up, that define Transnet as a winning organization. It's about a safety mindset, good communication, treating each other with dignity and respect, and power to perform in our jobs, business focus, rewarded recognizing good work, and delivering on our promises. That's the behaviors that shape Transnet culture. Of course, investing in our people is a key part of a winning Transnet. In this regard, we've now begun implementing a new competency-based development and reward system for the critical grades, which looks at competencies acquired and applied, and that allows for progression and for reward in the organization. We've also got a fairly comprehensive six-year resource plan that is aligned to the strategy of the business and the growth strategy, which aligns human resource requirements to deliver on that strategy. It's about a comprehensive growth by ourselves strategy, which looks at acquiring just over 13,800 people, employees, into the organization over the next 5 years. What have we done thus far? We've got about 220 engineering bursaries in place, 320 technician bursaries. We've recruited 1,200 apprentices thus far. We have adopted 9 de Maleri schools, and we've got a graduate in training program. So that is part of an annual target that we have that looks at making sure that we can achieve the 13,800 skills that are required. The next slide breaks that down per year into the various categories. As you can see, in the 2008 financial year, just over 2,900 skills that will need to be brought into the organization, critical skills, scarce skills, of which we've already achieved 50% in the year already. Managing talent, of course, is a key element of ensuring that we have the right people with the right skills in the right jobs at the right time. That is absolutely key to ensuring that we can deliver on our growth strategy. In this regard, we've got stratified succession pools across all management levels. We've got talent forums that are operational, that identify talent and therefore manage talent in a specific way. And we've got a succession plan for all senior managers as well. Clearly, a sourcing strategy for mission-critical and priority skills is key, and we have that in place. That is why we are able to meet our targets on an annual basis. We've got mentoring and executive coaching programs to accelerate development of our management cadre, and we've got a retention strategy in place to retain top talent across the business. Thus far, we have just over 2,400 managers that have gone through an extensive leadership development program to ensure that we can have the competencies in place to deliver on our strategy. From an employment equity point of view, 71% of our staff are black and 84% male. That's the current profile of Transnet. We have a employment equity strategy that looks at achieving better representation at every occupational level. And we've broken down our targets in terms of employment equity into the various categories. Whilst we have achieved our first five-year targets in terms of our employment equity plan, it was a consolidated target for the group as a whole. What we've now done is broken up into the various grades. And so at top and senior management level, the first bar will show you where we are currently in March 2008, and then the next bar will show you what the target is for that category of workers for 2010. We're looking at increasing our profile in terms of representativity, black representativity in the senior management, top management, professional and skills categories, as well as increasing our female component in those. In as far as the semi-skilled and unskilled areas, the challenge there is about female representativity and how do we achieve that. Finally, from a performance is a key to achieving business success. we have got a fairly comprehensive performance management system in place. Clearly, that doesn't give you overnight a performance culture. And so we are driving a process to ensuring that there's a better performance culture. All managers have individual scorecards across the entire organization. The values that make up the Transnet culture is embedded into these scorecards, and clearly we're now getting better alignment with the business performance indicators. We've now started cascading this individual performance contracts down into the bargaining unit, where the first line managers, supervisors, specialists, and technicians are now included in the individual performance management system. Just over 2,500 of them have been included. For the rest of the bargaining unit, it is team-based performance targets that drive behavior. Those are the key initiatives that have been driven to HR in the year, and we're looking to embed and continue to drive these into the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that the presentations up to this point have given an overview of Transnet and certainly the areas that we did not cover with the committee when the committee came to visit. What I'd like to propose is that at this point we do the presentation on the VNA, and then we take questions on what we've covered so far. And then we come back and conclude the presentations on the individual business units, if that is all right with you. I think if I can just ask, I think Kamoto, you brought some maps. Did you bring the big map? There is one on the presentation. Okay. All right. So while we let's get a hand up. Okay. Get the map in the hand up. I'm sure by now everybody's seen multiple press reports on this, and everybody saw the picture and read the Sunday newspapers with the report of the very big headline on Sunday that Transnet sold our tea to foreigners. Which and the fish. And no one was more, I suppose, astonished, surprised than we were at Transnet. And we have put out a statement, which I think members have now all received, in which we have been quite forthright about the fact that the Sunday Times has published what we firmly believe is a false, misleading, and irresponsible article. And that we have certainly taken and we are taking legal advice on it, and we will deal with that part of it. But we thought that it's important for us also, as we did yesterday in a press conference, but that we thought it would be important for this morning for us to brief the committee as to what we said in the press conference yesterday. So let me just begin and then ask Chris Wells, who was the person that dealt most closely with the 2006 agreement. Sorry. So I'll go through our response to the article in the Sunday Times, and then Chris will go through the Lake Shell Agreement, and then we will also talk through between Brio and Chamotso on what are the issues that we have with the ICM or the Integrated Coastal Management Bill, just to put it into context, because I think that's important. I think the first point to make is that we view the claims in the Sunday Times article as clearly inaccurate and, as I've already said, malicious, they're irresponsible, and really just not worthy of a newspaper like the Sunday Times. And I think as South Africans, the least we can expect from the press is responsible reporting. Of course, Transnet does not own the sea between Cape Town port and Robben Island. We do not own the sea from Greenpoint to Robben Island or from Blobergstrand to Robben Island. It's just a fact. It's a reality. If you don't own something, you cannot sell it. And even if we did own it, why would we want to sell it? Because we don't own it, so we didn't sell it. We didn't sell it in a secret deal. We did not sell it to foreigners or to locals. We sold it to no one. And so it wasn't 22 kilometers. It wasn't 90 square kilometers. We sold nothing of the sort. What we did sell was a 26% shareholding in the V&A Waterfront Company, or the V&A Waterfront Holding Pty Limited Company. We sold 26% of it, and our pension funds sold 74%. So together, we sold 100% shares of our shares in that company. And that company, and maybe if we can put up the map, which is in our slide presentation, and it's very difficult to show it here, but maybe, right. See, that's the map. The V&A part of it, V&A Waterfront, is what Cape Townians would know as the properties that sit on the V&A Waterfront site. In other words, the apartment blocks, the hotels, and the properties they sit on, the leases, the rental income is in that V&A Waterfront Holding Company, and underneath that are the V&A Property Company and a number of other smaller companies. That company, the V&A Waterfront Holding Company, was put in place in 2001, as Chris will explain. And arising out of that 2001 agreement are commitments in relation to reclamation, in relation to three pieces of property, or three pieces of land, potentially three reclamations, which are denoted by those three shaded areas over there. That one, and those two smaller areas. The two smaller areas are essentially, I suppose, breakwaters, an area that will ultimately be for protection of marine services. And this area over here, which is an area to be reclaimed at some point, provided, of course, it can get through all of the EIA approvals and all of the other legal approvals that are required, that area is potentially an area for development. And in terms of the 2001 governing agreement that was put in place when the V&A Waterfront Holding Company, of which Transnet owned a 26% shareholding in terms of that, Transnet had an obligation, and that obligation, and I'll read it to you, in terms of paragraph 8.1, it reads, the cost of reclamation of all the reclaimed land referred to in an earlier clause, which is 3 and 4 above, shall be for account of the V&A properties. 8.2, and this is what Transnet's obligation is. Transnet undertakes to cooperate to procure that such land will have the status of state-owned land. Is thereafter granted to Transnet as the appropriate authority having jurisdiction over water area concerned in terms of the Seashore Act 1935, Act 21 of 1935, and immediately thereafter transferred to the V&A properties for no further consideration to V&A properties. So once that Transnet obligation is to help procure and cooperate in the procurement of the reclamation. Because there was the Seashore Act, and Transnet was the only entity that had rights of reclamation in terms of that Seashore Act. So that is it. That. It's not this, as indicated in the Sunday Times. We don't own that. Well, the size of the black thing is not determined because it needs to be reclaimed first before it gets determined. And when you apply for reclamation, you have to then decide what that, you know, it has to go through some planning, through some design. The engineers, I suppose, have to decide what can and can't be done. And then the environmental approval and the EIAs have to be gone through. And somebody has to decide whether you can, what can and can't be reclaimed. What? This. It's not determined in the agreement, and it's not specified. The size of this is not specified in any agreement. It is just mentioned as a piece of land adjacent to Granger Bay, and it's set out in a map that is in the agreement, and the map is in the agreement, and we're making copies of the agreement to hand out to this committee, to the Environmental Affairs Committee, and in fact the Environmental Affairs Committee of the National Assembly was given a copy of that 2001 agreement in March this year, and we will also make copies of the Lex Shell agreement give to this committee, and hopefully all of those copies will be printed and available by the end of this meeting. But this is not, the size of that is not mentioned. It's a relatively small piece of land that would be reclaimed. Whether or not the reclamation can even happen depends on whether the authorities will give the environmental approval. There are no environmental approvals. There's no reclamation that's been applied for, as far as I know, at the moment. And whether the authorities would give approval for a particular size area. I know that on the other side of this, when we applied, as you know, for the expansion of the Cape Town Container Terminal, and we wanted to do some reclamation for the expansion in one design, Moira, we were turned down. So, you know, you can't take for granted that you're going to get it approved. And so there's nothing in the agreement that says you will have X number of square meters or hectares or acres or whatever the skis measured as part of this. So there's nothing specified in the 2001 agreement. But we don't own, and I think we just want to be clear, we did not sell this, which is what the Sunday Times says we sold. This, from there to there, and there to there, are port limits. But doesn't mean we own it. It's just a port limit. We don't own it. We haven't sold it. It's very important that we clarify that for everybody.
Sorry.
I think it's also important just to make the point again that we have not done any secret deals. You know, one of the things and one of the reasons why we have taken such a serious and such a visible and tough position on the article that the Sunday Times has published is that we have put in place at Transnet very strong corporate governance, and we've prided ourselves in the accountability that we're building in this company. You know, this was approved, we took this to our board, it was approved by our board. We then applied for PFMA approval in terms of Section 54. That PFMA approval was granted by the Minister of Public Enterprises. We then put a process in place, and I'll ask Chris now to go through the process we put in place in dealing with the disposal of our 26% shareholding in the V&A Waterfront Holdings Company. And so the 26% shareholding that we sold in the V&A. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, I'll just do briefly with some background, because Maria's covered quite a lot of it. But just to draw members' attention to the origins of the waterfront. It was pre-1990 derelict land down by the harbour, the current waterfront that we currently know. And Transnet initiated the development of that derelict land between 1990 and 1995. And in 1995, Transnet sold that land with the development on it to the Transnet Pension. To the Transnet Pension Fund. Then in 2001, and this is the important date that Maria was talking about, the pension fund, which was now the owner of what we know as the V&A Waterfront, was split into three separate pension funds, two defined benefit funds and one defined contribution. And in that restructuring, a governing agreement was put in place to govern how that restructuring would take place. And the equity interest in the V&A waterfront between the three pension funds and Transnet. The outcome of that was that Transnet ended up owning 26%, as Maria said, and the three pension funds, 74% of the shares of the V&A Waterfront Holdings Pty Limited. Two companies essentially were formed, a holding company called the V&A Waterfront Holdings Pty Limited, and it had a wholly owned subsidiary which owned all the property. It's very common in this structure. You have one property holding company and then the holding company. And in the holding company, the pension funds owned 74% of the shares and Transnet owned 26% of the shares. And the other important aspect of the governing agreement was certain obligations which Transnet undertook. And those obligations in relation to reclamation were worded as cooperate to enable the process for a limited reclamation clearly defined on the map that Maria showed you, which was annexed to the governing agreement and showed where the reclamation could take place. And, and the agreement says immediately adjacent to the areas marked, subject to all the not necessary approvals for the reclamation. Okay, I won't go through that. Just on the Seashore Act, in the past, Transnet relied on the provisions of the Seashore Act to reclaim land from the sea in support of its development program. And of course, most of the container terminals, for example, you needed to make reclamation of certain parts of the land. You reclaimed it through the Seashore Act, and then title deed to that land was effected into Transnet's name. However, even in terms of that act, one needed to do the relevant marine studies give an articulation of the reasons why reclamation was necessary. The environmental impact assessments needed to be done as required. And then an application to the minister with all that supporting information had to be tabled. And the minister alone had the right to decide whether or not to approve it. If it was turned down by the minister, no reclamation could take place. That was what was contained in the Seashore Act. Then I want to move on to the sale of the V&A waterfront, which took place in 2006. Now, the V&A waterfront, as we know it today, was unused area in the waterfront that was developed because it was unused. And so it was not essentially part of the network that was necessary for the Port Authority to operate. For Transnet itself, which owned 26% of an investment, it is not core to the operations of Transnet, and it was identified as non-core. For the pension funds themselves, they had so much of their funds invested in a single property asset. It wasn't good practice for allocation of funds. So together we decided to sell our shares in V&A Waterfront Holdings Limited. That's all we owned, were shares in that company. And we sold that through a public process in 2006. Now, because of the size of the transaction, and because of obviously various interested stakeholders, and because of our governance program, we were meticulous in having a transparent and strong governance process throughout. To begin with, we appointed two independent transaction advisors who would do all the work on our behalf, and that was Deutsche Bank and Investec, as two independent transaction advisors. On top of that, we appointed KPMG as the governance authority. The international accounting firm KPMG were required, in terms of their mandate, to basically oversee every aspect of the pre-bidding, the bidding, and the award of the final bid to the appropriate party. And that culminated with them issuing a signed report which said that they were participants throughout the process, and they were entirely satisfied that all the governance requirements laid out, all the requirements set out in the bidding process documents, and the independence and transparency of the award to the winning bidder, they were entirely satisfied with. And that report is on hand and available. So the independent transaction advisors, assisted by the oversight of KPMG, went through the whole bidding process, which was a public bid. Anyone could have made a bid. The bids were received. The bids were received in a designated part of one of the transaction advisors' reception. All of it was videoed, and it was videoed the bid documents being placed in the receptacle being opened in video by the transaction advisors and audited by KPMG, and the bid tabled, recorded, stamped. From there on, the whole process was governed by those parties, right the way through to when those parties made a recommendation to Transnet to say, these are the bids, there is the winning bid in terms of the criteria, all you have to do is agree that that's the winning bid. That's how the process took place. And the winning bid was awarded to that participant which scored the most points in accordance with the pre-designed bid criteria, which was primarily the highest price. The reason why highest price was the prime driver was 74% of these assets were owned by pensioners. It affected anything other than the highest price. Transnet drove as a secondary aspect a requirement for BBBEE, which ended up there being 25% of the shares from the winning bid allocated to BEE, and the remaining shares were taken up by two foreign shareholders through Lexshell Company, which is a South African company. So the shareholders of Lexshell, the South African company, would be the BEE participants and the two foreign buyers, London and Regional, and is just small part of Dubai World. And those full details were documented at the conclusion of the process in the press, and that was some 19 months ago that was concluded. In terms of that agreement, there were limited warranties specified, and the total warranties had a cap on them, and they were very strict and confined in terms of the agreement. And that warranty period expires in December of 2008. And there is this statement of a potential $20 billion plan, and all we can say is that's pure fabrication and misrepresentation. In terms of the agreement, we gave no warranty on reclamation, none at all, no warranty. And the warranties are capped as a percentage of the $7 billion sale price. And they're very strict criteria as to what can be claimed under the warranty provisions.
And
also,
are you
going to
deal with
the ICM book? Or are you going to deal with it? You'll recall that, that during your visit to the port in Durban, at the briefing preceding the tour of the port, I indicated that there was a spill and set out before the committee what the essential issues are that we're engaging with in respect to the spill. I will deal with those issues here and with certain applications in relation to the law, particularly the Seashore Act. Transnet has made it clear at all times that it supports the objects and purpose of the ICM deal, and that it will at all times adhere to applicable environmental and town planning legislation. And I think it is important to emphasize that Transnet already does that in respect of its capital investment program. Even before this ICM deal, that has been the mechanism that has been in place. We also have submitted before to the relevant committees of Parliament that we support the object of developing and maintaining a sustainable environmental management plan for South African coastal areas. The proposals that we have made in relation to amendments to the ICM bill have been directed, therefore, primarily at ensuring that Transnet is able to continue to undertake important infrastructural development of the ports, which fall under the jurisdiction of Transnet National Port Authority. And this would include the extension of key walls, dredging activities, etc. Secondly, that Transnet is able to comply with its existing contractual and other obligations to third parties in respect of ports which fall under the jurisdiction of National Port Authority. And those would relate to, for example, berthing, mooring agreements, leases over the sea areas within the ports where for example, the vessels would come in. And that it is also able to comply with the existing contractual obligations in respect of the reclamation of land from the sea areas immediately adjoining the V&A waterfront. And those are the areas that Chris and Maria have made reference to and which were, in any event, provided for in the governing agreement of 2001. I think maybe just to get a bit more clarity on the point around the legal provisions relating to this, I'll just, they're not on the slide, but I'll just provide some clarity. The Section 2 of the Seashore Act vests the ownership
of the seashore and the sea in the president. Section 5.2 of the Seashore Act then grants the Minister of Transport the power to cause land submerged by the sea and seashore land to be reclaimed. And for example, whenever there's been development in the port and you need to make applications for the reclamation, the executive authority who would deal with that is the Minister of Transport. Now, in 1959, there was an amendment to the Seashore Act, which brought in a Section 13B to the Seashore Act, which provides for a special dispensation for land and sea forming part of a port or a harbor. And it provides as follows. And quote, nothing contained in this act shall affect any rights or powers conferred upon the administration by or under any law relating to ports and harbors in respect of any portion of the seashore or the sea, and in the event of any conflict between the provisions of this act, which is the Seashore Act, and any such law, the rights and powers of the said administration shall be determined by the provisions of such law and not by the provisions of this act, which is the Seashore Act. The administration, of course, if one goes back to examine the history of Transnet, the administration was defined as the Railways and Harbors Administration, which then evolved to become the South African Transport Services, and then by virtue of the Legal Succession Act into Transnet. And so those provisions in relation to reclamation were already provided, and the Seashore Act, in fact, provided a special dispensation for Transnet for purpose of development within the ports and the harbors, and allowed effectively the Legal Succession Act, Requisite Act, to trump over the Seashore Act. Transnet embarked on a consultative process in formulating and motivating its proposed amendment to the ICMP. As indicated, we alerted you as a committee to that in Durban when you visited Durban. The approach included several meetings and discussions with relevant stakeholders, who included the Director General and legal advisors of the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, state law advisors, the Portfolio Committee on Environmental Affairs and Tourism in the National Assembly, the Select Committee on Environmental Affairs and Tourism in the National Council of Provinces, the Portfolio Committee on Community Development in the Western Cape Provincial Parliament, and the relevant committees in other provincial legislatures.
Now, some proposed solutions to the actual bill or the amendments that we've been looking at. One was to ensure that the ports are excluded from what is defined as coastal public property. And we wanted that being done by definition so that the port area is excluded by operation of law at the date when the ICM bill gets enacted into law. And our proposal has been that this can be done simply by excluding the ports which fall under the TMPA's jurisdiction from the definition of coastal public property by reference to the National Port Act. So the National Port Act already defines what the ports are. Secondly, we ask that the concept of government purposes should be amplified and amended. That is the concept used in the ICM bill, should be amplified and amended so as to include specifically the exercise of functions by an organ of state in order to comply with the statutory and other lawful obligations, provided at all times that such purpose was not in conflict with the aims and objectives of the ICMP. Now, this definition of government purpose was important, particularly when one has to bear in mind the reclamation provision, that the reclamation was provided for, that you could do a reclamation for government purposes. And we said that you needed to ensure that there is no ambiguity and there's no doubt which might result in a dispute around that, that what already has been allowed in the law in the sort of transfer for reclamation of land for development, etc., would be considered to constitute government purposes. The other point was that there was a need to include a general land reclamation provision in the ICM bill similar to that found in the Fisher Act. And I think it is important to make the point here that at the time when the ICM bill was introduced, it repealed the Fisher Act in its entirety without providing for a reclamation mechanism. That was picked up later, and in one of the amendments, there was an amendment which was brought in. But of course, there was then the difficulty around whether government purposes included the statutory and other local obligations of Transnet as set out in the Legal Succession Act and the National Courts Act. This has covered, Jefferson, the submissions, essentially the essential trust of the submissions of Transnet. All of them have been made to existing mechanisms of parliament. One gets the impression around when they talk about lobbying, that there is a mechanism that we use other than the existing structural arrangements that we have for comment into the legislative process. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.